Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with a personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 69. I get it, 69. Hilarious, we're in 7th grade. Actually, most of the time we do act like we're in 7th grade in the show, so I don't know why I'm pretending like I'm above that joke. Anyway, we are at South by Southwest in Austin. This is a super fun special show that we're going to put up tonight. Just a few things I want to get out of the way first. There's a dude who brought a giant Nerdist cake, a gorgeous cake that was yellow with our podcast logo and a little outline of the state of Texas on it. His name was Wayne. He said his girlfriend, I believe it was Kelly, I hope her name was Kelly, but if not, Wayne, please email me and let me know so I can link to you guys. But he brought this cake, which I had some of, the other comics had some of, and then I took out afterwards before the next comedy show and served to everyone. So A, I hope you didn't fill it with drugs, and B, thank you so much. The cake was delicious. So awesome, awesome, awesome Nerdist fans. We'll post pictures of the cake as well. Just a couple quick things. I will be at Zany's this week in Chicago, the March 16th through 19th. One show Wednesday, one show Thursday, two shows Friday and Saturday. Also be doing a signing at C2E2 Friday afternoon and a panel with Eliza Dushku on Saturday. And don't forget about the Wilbur Show April 9th. And of course, all the stuff going on at Nerdist at Meltdown. And I am super excited to announce sponsoring Nerdist Industries. In one fell swoop, the podcast and the blog all this week is threadless.com. Now, I typically only pick sponsors that I would actually use, and Threadless is one of those. In fact, I actually sought them out and asked them if they would sponsor the podcast because I was buying so many of their shirts. I was like, hey, why don't you sponsor my podcast? I wore their House Brawl shirt, which is all four houses of Hogwarts on the Craig Ferguson show. All-American Squirrel is another one that I loved, a little squirrel with an acorn like in the Heisman position. And these guys have been around for 11 years. They have over 1 million members who cast votes and help us decide which of the most awesome nerd shirts should be out there in the world. They've paid artists over $1.1 million just last year alone. And their total votes as of March 2nd for all their shirts are almost 150 million votes. So these are good dudes. I know them. They are based in Chicago. I'm going to tour their facility when I go there to perform this week. And I am so thankful that they are sponsoring not only podcasts, but also the blog, because I genuinely adore their products. So threadless.com, if you haven't been there, which I'd be surprised if you hadn't, go check it out. Get nerd gear. Interact with other nerds. Submit and score designs at Threadless. Thanks, guys. This show that I'm about to play for you was beyond awesome. We did a live podcast here at South by Southwest, a packed house at Esther's Follies, which was very nice because they didn't know who the guest was going to be. And I usually feel like the guest has the drawing power, but they were pleasantly surprised when they found out that it was, in fact, Mr. John Oliver, a guy that I love. I did his New York stand-up special show last year. He's incredibly funny. John, I'm sure you know from The Daily Show, he is British and hilarious. So I was so happy to be able to surprise South by Southwest with John Oliver, and we had a blast, took audience questions and everything. So I'm going to shut up now so you can listen to that show. Thanks for tuning in. The Nerdist Podcast, episode number 69 with John Oliver.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
fake to me.
I feel like audience. This is rehearsed.
This podcast was shopped.
That was not our traditional walk-on theme.
Nope.
But it will be from now on.
New tradition.
I like that. That's, I like that vibe.
That's the way you roll at Esther's Follies at South by South. SXSW Tiny I for South by Southwest Interactive. How are you guys doing? Everyone have a nice time at Nerd Camp? Good. It's a lot of fun. I almost thought Matthew Myra was not going to be able to be here because he's horribly... First of all, Matt Myra, how much poundage have you shed in the past month?
Like 35 pounds.
35 pounds!
It's all going back on with barbecue.
That's how they get you. And so Matt has had a horrible back problem because we complain about our ailments on the podcast.
Bulging disc.
That's what we
bulging
do.
Bulging disc and
L5.
It's right off the fifth lumbar.
Oh, so yeah, the L5. Yeah.
That is. That got a little ooh. The
That's
L5.
The toughest one, guys.
It is. L5. That's the base. That's the fifth lumbar.
Yeah.
I fractured a transverse process off my fifth lumbar. When
don't
I was
know
a teenager.
Most of those words.
Well. The point of the matter is that it is one of the worst pains you can endure because it holds your entire body.
Well, what it does, apparently, the one that it's like on the nerve that affects my left leg. And so it's just sharp, horrible pains when I sit.
Thank you. That's great, Matt.
So anyway, I got here.
Yeah, so last week Matt was like, I don't think I can actually sit on the plane to come down.
No.
And then I checked in with a couple of days ago and he was like, 3 Vicodin, I'm going to be okay. Yeah. 3 Vicodin.
I did it. I slept the whole way.
That's what happens when you take more
Which
than the recommended
nice,
dosage.
On a Southwest flight, if like there's one open seat, it's going to be next to the fat guy.
You sat next to a fat guy?
No, I was. Oh, okay. I was him.
What a horrible...
I was him, so it was like luxury.
You walk onto the plane, you sit down, he walks on, you have a knowing stare.
So, listen, if you're kind of overweight, sit towards the front. They'll always walk past you, thinking there's a better seat in the back.
That's a good point.
That's good. So you're seat jacked, basically. Yeah.
Southwest is designed to humiliate anyone.
It's I got a tweet from some guys like, be careful, man. That's that one Kevin Smith got kicked off.
Like a heads up for you, just in case?
Thanks.
And what did he think that warning was going to do?
Make me buy another seat?
As they were leading you off. Oh, that stranger warned me this would happen. Here I go. We actually would have gotten this great press for the podcast. If you can get kicked off on the way home, I would really appreciate it. We don't have a marketing
budget.
I'll
do it.
I enjoy Austin. I've almost been gouged in the eye by more ironic mustaches than anywhere else. Austin right now is fascinated with the curly Q mustache.
Is it ironic, though? Because isn't that mustache kind of from the South? Isn't it from Texas? Isn't that a sincere stash?
It's never sincere.
It's not... Well, it's not
unless you're tying someone to train tracks, it's never sincere.
It is not, yeah. Unless you have the oil can hat and you hear the... Then, you know, if you're plotting a young damsel's demise.
Yeah.
I never understood the point of that. So why did the evil guy with the hat... Why was he trying to cut the woman in half with a train?
Because it's awesome.
Well, I don't know.
It's a guy that just like, I wonder what would happen if, and there's no real way of knowing back then, no internet in the Old West, and you want to know what it's going to look like, you fucking have to do it yourself.
So you're saying that hasn't happened because people can Google it.
Yeah, now you can just Google what it looks like for someone to get hit by a train. It's true, you can, and I have, and it's great.
And also, because I'm from the South, and I always forget the terminology. I slip back into y'all when I come back to the South, and I forget the terminology. And something happened at a restaurant last night, and I wanted to make a bit out of it, and I realized the only way I could make it work would sound too much like Brian Regan. Because this woman, a wait person, said, oh, we ordered.
A lady.
We ordered, and she was like, all right, y'all holler if you need anything else. And so 10 minutes later, I really wanted to go, I would like something else now, as per our agreement from earlier. Like, that's too much. That's Brian Regan's voice. I can't do that.
YouTube.
And that's the only way it works, is if you do the, as per our agreement from earlier. It doesn't work if I just do it as Chris Hardwick. Are you guys having fun down here?
Yes, it's great. I've been drinking so much.
Yeah.
So much. It's all I do every time I'm in Austin.
You got the two X's down there? The two X's?
I got, the Dos Equis. It's drinking so much this weekend. Me and my girlfriend are just like, how early can we? Is 11 a.m. too early to start? That's all I do when I'm here is I just drink and look for free pants. That's all I do.
But where do you find free pants?
You got all these fucking assholes giving away shit for free. I was at a show last night. Some guy throws out a fucking piece of paper and he's like, who got it? Some guy's like, I got it. He's all, you get a free MacBook Air.
What?
The fuck yeah. That's what happens out here, Chris. Well, you get free shit for being dumbasses.
P.S. Jonah, I don't know if it's just the booze talking or not, but I think maybe you should aim higher than pants.
Well, yeah, but fucking, it's hard for me to find a good pair of pants. And when they're free, oh, Chris.
That's the best kind.
Oh, so nice.
Oh, when they're just tugging on your balls, you're like, oh, I didn't pay for you. I get this for free.
This is great.
I love the temporary Apple store that they threw up.
That's
that looks like a
thing.
Permanent Apple store.
Yeah, I walked by it. Had no idea it was temporary.
Yeah, they're just selling iPad 2s. There's a line out front. Apparently, they're out. So I don't know why there's a line out front.
It's just temporary sadness, not permanent.
Just so people can go in and look at the iPad 2s that are in there and be like, well, I can't buy this. I'm glad I waited in line all day for nothing.
One day.
But if you need a USB keyboard or something, that's in there too.
Yep. Or a magnetic case that turns your iPod on. What? See, I'm doing Regan again. God damn it. I can't help it.
What else can you get in there, guys?
I don't know. Matt, have you seen anything in the last couple of days that you're excited about? You just got
I saw a giant... inflatable astronaut on the floor, and that was really exciting.
Really?
Yeah, someone's excited.
Well, they might be an inflatable enthusiast.
Right.
It might not be that they enjoy the
but there was Space Camp had a booth.
They did?
Yeah, and
was Leah Thompson there?
I was pretty stoked now. Unfortunately.
Well, I'm not interested then.
Unfortunately.
See, they're kids, and they actually get sent into space.
Who else are we going to send?
There's no real security down there in Cape Canaveral. Any kids can hop into the shuttle and get blasted up.
I haven't seen it in so long. They just accidentally go into space?
I said lunch, not launch.
No.
And then they go into space. And then the space camp kids happen.
Kidstronauts.
Kidstronauts. But Matt, last night, this diet that Matt's on is, he's the strict diet for 6 days a week. One day a week, he gets a cheat day.
Yeah.
Which he clings to like a fucking koala on a eucalyptus.
Every Sunday, it's fucking Christmas morning.
It is. So, you were saying last night, like, you start the day and you're just, like, taking bites of things and throwing them away.
Yeah, I live like a super rich guy on Sundays where I'm like, oh, that was enough. Throw out the rest. Yeah. I don't need that. So I'll have a pie.
Last night at 1:30 in the morning when I was going back to the hotel, you were like, street tacos! Did you find the street tacos?
Found the street tacos. Very bland.
Not good?
Oh,
no es bueno?
Shit.
I am sad for you, Austin.
But my friend, this is Austin.
I'm sorry.
Dejas.
I had to put like hot sauce on it and salt and
this is the worst thing that's ever happened to anyone.
Ever. Ever. Including this week internationally.
Whoa. Yeah, this is the worst.
I'm serious.
Yep, they just turned on you. You better pop some Vicodin, because this turned into a bumpy flight, my friend.
Guys, this is the drugs talking. I don't mean that.
Your back problem is the worst. Yeah. Is the least of your problems right now.
Way to get everyone on your side, asshole.
Right? First you shit on their food, and then no.
You know, they were all on your side, because you're losing weight and you're living right, but then you took advantage of their kindness shitting on the less fortunate.
Yeah.
The tacos weren't great.
So...
That's what we're mad at, right?
All right, listen, we've blabbed enough. We have a very special guest. We were not able to announce this guest because he's doing his own show here, and it was also nice to have it be a surprise. And I'm thrilled because I've been wanting to get him on forever, so I am very pleased to introduce, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John Oliver! Mr. Oliver.
Good evening, Austin. Afternoon. 6 o'clock is a grey area, isn't it?
I know. You know, that's the problem. We just switched the clocks. Otherwise, this would have been at night and felt like a show.
I stand by my evening.
Don't be fooled by the pinhole light duvetine behind
that's
us.
That's not the sky, Chris?
Nope, that's not. Nope.
Wow. A lot of people holding their phones up as cameras now. Right, it's all mechanical. That's all I could see is people saying, well, I want to enjoy this, but now's not good for me.
No. John, I'm sorry. You probably didn't see this. We're performing for Terminators.
No offense.
So in the back, it's right now they're assessing your weaknesses.
Okay. Well, you're going to be going for a long list. I'd love to see through your mechanical eyes right now. Insecure. Well, wasn't hugged much as a child. A standard British English comedian flashing up down the side. Don't ah, that's just patronising.
It was just one guy. It was just one guy over here.
Okay. Well, thanks for the gesture.
You showed me a phenomenal picture before we came out here of something wonderful that happened.
So yeah, my fiance and I were about to fly here. And we were in the airport in Dallas, and she went to the bathroom. This is going to seem very specific, superfluous information. I promise it's worth staying with the narrative. She went to the bathroom beforehand. She'd been gone 2 minutes, and then a text emerged on my phone of her standing next to Mike Tyson and smiling. Wow, what 120 seconds you've had. Are you okay? Let's hope this is a fun anecdote and not a sad one down the line.
What did you do with your 120 seconds?
Yeah, it was amazing. She said he was lovely. She talked to him about pigeons.
What? Pigeons.
It's a good time in his life to meet him.
I like pigeons.
As opposed to that other time.
That's right.
That he went to jail for.
She said, I saw you on Ellen. And she showed me, and he was very, very nice. He said some very interesting things about people who may seem great are not necessarily great as people, which he both argues and embodies. Mm-hmm. And then she said to him, it's good to see that you're doing so well with your life now, which I think is a good example of talking faster than you're thinking. Am I patronising Mike Tyson? I think I might get 80s Mike to reappear here.
What were they talking about pigeons? Was he like,
I like to eat pigeons.
And then she's said hello.
Well, because he does. He loves pigeons. He loves them. He has a show at the moment about pigeons and his relationship with them. And that's not as weird as it sounds.
If we did a show on Animal Planet, would it be about the pigeons or would it be about Mike?
I see that you really like pigeons now. And he put his hand on his heart and said, they're my life now. Exactly. That is objectively nice. Whatever you know about his past, that is a charming moment in an individual's flawed past.
They've embraced, some people embrace religion, other people embrace philosophy, he embraced the pigeon.
He's fully embraced the pigeon.
The flying rat, you know.
Don't you fucking say that around
Don't
Tyson!
Don't fucking say that. Fucking rat, they're filthy animals.
You see, it would have been a very different encounter that you'd have had with Mike Tyson. Yeah. I know I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to confront him about this.
Yeah, exactly.
Flying rat, Mike. I don't care if I'm going to miss this flight now.
No. Here's why you're wrong, asshole.
That's how Mike Tyson fits you into the overhead compartment.
Yeah, guess what? Free flight.
Yeah.
Boom.
Oh, shit.
Boom, that's how I figure it out.
Yeah, that's thinking.
I think you mistakenly thought you won the exchange with Mike there. You still lost.
Sure did. Comfy, a little cozy, little all by myself.
Yeah, when your coccyx is folded up into your nose, you're like,
emerge victorious.
So what are you doing down here at South By?
Southwest.
I did the same thing. That's how locals say it. I'm trying to ingrate. Yep. That's how you infiltrate.
Well, the locals are wrong to do that. Okay. It takes 50% more time to complete the festival that you have.
So
I think the locals call it that shitty thing that makes all the traffic.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Right. You can't really appreciate that quite as well.
I don't know if you can clap and be here at the same time.
That's fair.
I just like to shorten 25% of things. So, John Hall, you are down here for why?
Yeah, I'm doing two gigs down here tonight. Literally here.
Oh, in this room.
On this stage. Later. Yeah. 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And 10. That's right. There's a big fan of the time 8 o'clock. Yeah.
8 o'clock is the magic hour!
Yes. Not too early, not too late. Not too early, not too late. I've got work out of my system. I'm not tired yet. 8 is the sweet spot for me. 8 and 10:30. Ooh, it's a push, isn't it? It's a push. Even during festival time. Yeah, 8 and 10:30. I'm doing two shows here to kind of promote the next series of the stand-up show, which you did.
Which I did in the first season.
That's right.
And I was talking to Kumail Nanjiani about it, and he said that it was the most fun set he's ever had was doing your show.
Oh, I hope so. He was fantastic. And it's a very warm, it's a kind of strangely warm, friendly crowd. Not that you're not, it's just not as much.
Right.
And so, but it does foster people really being able to enjoy themselves. Maria Bamford, who is always excellent, was just astonishing. Her set on this season is just incredible. So I really heartily recommend it. Even if you don't watch the rest of it, you watch the episode that she's on. Now, this is the perfect time for me to tell you which episode that is. I don't have that information.
It's better that you don't, because now they'll watch every episode looking for Bamford.
And it's worth it. She really is amazing. So yeah, it's a really fun gig to do. It's a nice room, that.
I had a blast. It was shot at the Skirball Center,
yep,
in right near NYU. Mm-hmm. And it was, I don't know how you guys managed to pull in, it must have been like, what, 600-700 people there in
the
crowd?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
It's super nice.
Yeah, they're incredibly nice. I guess they're comedy fans, and that is always pleasant to perform to comedy fans rather than comedy endurers. Can happen.
So you do sets at the beginning of every show,
yeah,
and that is, I marvel at that, because it's basically new material you have to write for every show.
I guess so, yeah. But, you know, it kind of accumulates over the years, so you break it down 6-10 minutes, it's not that bad.
Yeah, but but you're still doing, like, you know, an hour, hour and a half, right?
That's true.
You add it all together.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You're going to freak him out. He's not going to do it next year.
Yeah, that's right.
What you're doing is not humanly possible, John.
Oh no, it's a lot of fun. We just do it over a weekend. Just go and accumulate the material and then do it, and then it's done, and then you go and write some more.
I mean, it's exciting because, you know, for stand-ups there are not really a lot of outlets to do stand-up on television.
Yeah.
So to have one that's good.
Yeah, it's a show that I would watch. Like, the comedians on it I love, and it's a show that I would watch were it not for the fact that I'm in it, so I won't.
And it's also called John Oliver's New York Stand-Up Special.
Yeah, and so it's a show that contractually I have to be in. Yeah.
Where do you find time to work out jokes?
I just like doing it. I find it relaxing. And that is not a healthy state of affairs to do stand-up to relax.
Right.
But I do. Like, The Daily Show is a particularly rigorous and, like, intensive writing process, so it's nice to go and do something else that doesn't, you know, it's hugely collaborative, The Daily Show, across all the departments. And it's nice to just go out and talk and then live with the consequences of those words.
Well, with Daily Show, what always seems scary to me is that it's not like you can really workshop those bits.
No.
So you're just doing them, and it is an incredibly high-pressure situation because of the level that people expect from The Daily Show.
Right, we do rehearse. We rehearse at 4:15, but it's not like SNL where they have an audience in there. We just rehearse to say the words out loud. And then sometimes in the process of saying them out loud, they sound a lot less funny than they do when they're written on a page.
Right.
That didn't feel good coming out of my mouth. Let's change those. Then there's a very quick, intensive rewrite between rehearsal and the show. But it's the first time we've ever done it in front of an audience is the show, you see.
So was there an audition process, or did they find you? Did Daily Show find you?
It was weird. I'd never been to America before, and so I got offered the job, and I've not really been home. All my stuff's still in storage. So yeah, I haven't really been back. And they were they're always looking for people, and I think Ricky Gervais, who I didn't know at the time, John had asked him whether he knew of someone, and he knew the things I was writing in England, so he recommended me, so I owe him.
Oh, wow.
I owe him big. One day I will kill a man for him. I don't know what that day is or who the man will be, but...
You might have to take a bullet for him if he keeps mixing it up at the Golden Globes the way he has.
God, yeah, I didn't think that that might be the other way he chooses to spend that favour. I just assumed I would be the person doing the killing, not saying, well, that man looks angry, step in front of me. Yeah, I guess that works too.
You should take the bullet, shouldn't you? I'm more rich than you, aren't I?
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
You're not pleased.
You did it well, but don't do it.
You're not pleased at all with any of my trying to infiltrate cultures. You didn't appreciate South By. Maybe you shouldn't do. Maybe Chris Hardwick, don't do a British accent to a professional British person.
That's right. I am professionally British.
You're professionally British.
When I was born, I instantly demanded money to speak. Otherwise, I might go a different way. Yeah. Professionally British.
Yep, you absolutely are.
Yeah.
So I know that you you did the Edinburgh Festival. I mean, I know about your history, and I know, like, I do. I
Yeah. I've studied up on you, John Oliver.
So
Edinburgh, I love. Have you did as well?
I've never done. I've been. I happen to be passing through Edinburgh, and I just caught some of the shows.
On the
shows.
Way to where? The North Sea?
No.
There's not much. Yep. Were you rigging? Were you offshore rigging?
I was following Alpha Waves to find the Fortress of Solitude.
Okay.
And I stopped now off in Edinburgh sense. With my friends Lex and Otis. And so I went and saw some of the shows, and it was mind-blowing.
I love it. I miss it so much. I went over there. I did Edinburgh every year, and it's every August I feel angsty. And Dimitri Martin, another comedian you all know, we always miss it horribly every August because it's the whole of August, and it is about as much fun as you can possibly have as a comedian because all your friends are there. You never usually get to be in the same place as comedians, and everyone's there, and everyone's doing our shows and trying really hard, and it's a really inspiring, wonderful place, the festival. You definitely should go.
I think about it a lot, but then I think, you know, no one knows who I am in Scotland, so it would be me just running around flyering the streets of Edinburgh for 30 days straight.
It's not without its bleakness, I will give you that. But it's also kind of, it's a real baptism of fire in a way. You do 27 straight hour gigs, and some of them can be brutal. But you learn so much about what you want to do as a stand-up. You kind of increase your learning curve, and it's just, I can't recommend it enough. I love it.
Do you have to get invited, Edinburgh, though? Can you just put up a show?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Yes, that is why it is so strange. And I think especially somewhere like Austin, I think, would appreciate Edinburgh in August because you don't need to be selective. There is no qualifying control going on. It is just if you think you want to do something, whether that's stand-up or King Lear on roller skates, and you are willing to get August free, you can do it. So you can see some weird stuff up there that is both good and bad.
Yeah. I remember seeing a bunch of insane street performance.
Yep.
And then, like, you know, I saw a show in a huge theater where it was a Scottish comic, and I could not understand a fucking word that came out of his mouth. And
what did it sound like, Chris?
I'd be intrigued to hear that, too.
It wasn't just...
Don't describe it. Embody it.
So go on, I think over there in the fucking the Flatlanders and all the fucking goats in there is a salty.
And I'm like, did you just say salty goats? What did I miss?
Better than I thought.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know, I bought because it was in the '90s, and my girlfriend at the time loved to just go places and rent a car and just drive.
That sounds exhausting.
It was.
That sounds like an exhausting relationship.
Guys, well, it's not happening anymore. Guys, and let me tell you, this was before there was everyone had cell phones and GPS, and we just had to use our fingers in the wind. Like, that's how we navigated, and we went through Edinburgh, and so it was absolutely insane. So we bought the truck stops in Scotland. Rather than having like Larry the Cable Guy tapes, have like Dudley Moore and Peter Cook tape, the clean tapes, and Billy Connolly. Love Billy Connolly, so I bought the tape, and again, it was like I couldn't understand a word of it.
I once saw in a truck stop in Scotland, there was the, not just the Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, but it was the Derek and Clive album. And you think someone is getting a different journey than they think they're getting with it. You know, like Derek and Clive were these two unbelievably obscene characters that Peter Cook and Dudley Moore did. I'm now realising where I am. That would seem a much more... It's very good, but for it to make sense, you'll need to first go through all the work of Peter Cook and Dudley Moore to see the turn that they made in their career into these two very obscene albums.
Okay, well, but, wait. Go.
Go to Scotland.
It's very, very good, yeah. But so, yeah, it's an odd place, Scotland. It's worth your time, and August is a good time.
It is, and it really is gorgeous.
Yeah, it is.
Except if you're driving through Scotland, and you've been driving for a while... And you see a car, a big truck coming at you in the right lane, and you forget that you're on the opposite side of the car in the opposite lane. You have this a lot when you're drifting up. Jesus Christ! Like, you forget that they're actually on the correct side because you drift. So just be careful if you're driving through Scotland.
Good tip. That's a good travel tip.
As an American.
How not to die around the world with Chris Hardwick.
I will watch that.
How Not to Die would be a fucking great show.
It would be good. because, you know, it's what everyone wants from a vacation, is to return.
Yeah, the best part about going down to South America was not dying.
Not
it was
dying.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It was great. We just didn't die, and we got back safely. It was awesome.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. Listen, there was some moderate raping and a little robbery, but other than that, at least we came back
Brazil,
alive.
But that's Brazil, you know?
Wait, I'm sorry. Did you say moderate raping?
Moderate raping.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my Nirvana cover band. Oh, Paul and Storm in the house. So who were your influences when you were growing up? Was it Dudley Moore, Peter Cook, these guys?
I love them. I guess my kind of generation in terms of who I was watching when I was a teenager, I was really obsessed with this guy Armando Iannucci's work, who he was behind Alan Partridge, he also worked with Chris Morris, who did a show called Brass Eye.
Of course. Yes.
All of these are very good. This is like a...
I've seen the Chris Morris stuff. Yeah,
yeah, it's really great. And he's just on a new movie called Four Lions.
Four Lions is an amazing movie.
Yeah, it's great. It's a comedy film about suicide bombers.
Yeah.
So there you go. You can imagine why it's
done
so well in America.
They're the protagonists, just to let you know. They're the ones you're rooting for throughout it.
Yeah.
And also for those hipsters out there, watch his show Nathan Barley. You'll really enjoy that.
Oh, yeah, Nathan Barley's great.
Yeah. I really loved them. And a stand-up called Stuart Lee.
You know Stuart Lee?
I don't know Stuart Lee.
He's very good. I loved him when I was just starting off doing stand-up. Dylan Moran. There's a reading list for you. There you go. Armando Iannucci, he's a phenomenal writer. He did a movie you might have seen last year called... I Don't Know.
Interesting title.
In the Loop.
Well done. Crowdsourcing.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
So
thank you for being a human IMDb there.
So who are British comics that Americans might not know that you feel like that we should go out and try to dig up?
In terms of seeing live?
Or at least just getting, you know, just getting recordings of.
Well, Stuart Lee is excellent. Simon Munnery is really phenomenal. Very imaginative. I think you'd like him. Although some of you probably wouldn't, but...
That's how things work.
That's true. That is a fair qualifier.
Sometimes stuff is rad, other times
not so rad.
And there's a live performer called Daniel Kitson, who you won't be able to find any recordings of, but he is worth seeing live, whether he's doing story shows or stand-up.
I think I might have seen Kitson at Edinburgh in like 96 or 7 when we went through there, and it was in a very small theater, but something about his set... I think he decided to eat a bag of crisps during his set. Does that sound like Kitson?
It sounds like he gets hungry.
Yes.
Yeah. it does. That could be him. That was not a bit, though.
No. He did do this bit.
Oh, and he did it as a bit. What I'm saying is, I don't think that was a prepared bit.
Oh, gotcha.
I think he got hungry and he lacks the performance discipline not to let that hunger affect what he's doing on stage. He kind of has no internal monologue, so he thinks, I'm hungry. There's some crisps that someone has. I will eat those. Not, I'm hungry. Well, I should have thought of that. I'm performing. This is their time. That doesn't apply.
By the way, he would say all that out loud, too.
And he would also narrate exactly what was going through. Yeah. But he's excellent if you ever get to see him live.
Are you bummed, and I don't know, because maybe you have friends who worked on this movie, so if you do, I apologize. Are you bummed about the Arthur remake? Yeah, I mean, he is.
I appointed this guy for any question that could be awkward, that gentleman is answering.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, he felt like we're all in a thing now. I can just offer my opinion when not asked.
It seems at best unnecessary.
Yeah.
And at worst ill-conceived.
I mean, Luis Guzman as Bitterman? Come on.
Yeah. But we're getting it. Yep. That's for sure. It's happening.
The thing that's infuriating to me about it is it's not like remaking an old movie. You're taking a character that someone created and stealing it from them.
Yeah.
Like, if someone was like, oh, I'm just going to be Chaplin now.
Right.
Like, well, you can't do that, because a guy did that already. You know? Like, I don't know. I don't think it's awesome.
Let the box office decide.
Yeah.
Let people talk with their dollars.
Are you guys going to see Arthur?
This is not the group to ask. This is coming to South by Southwest and saying, are you going to see the remake of Arthur? Yeah. That is the response you're going to get.
Jersey Shore in the house! Yeah.
You guys going to see Battle LA?
Not so much.
Yeah.
So what is a typical day like for you on the Daily Show?
Well, I get in the morning. We have a writer's meeting at 9 o'clock. We talk about what we're going to do, probably split off into pairs or do single passes on different aspects of the headline. Maybe we write a chat for a correspondent, whoever that chat is. Then we get some notes on it, rewrite, more notes, rewrite, lunch, rewrite. Then we rehearse at 4 o'clock, like I was saying, no audience. Then that takes about 20 minutes. Then from 4:20 to 6 o'clock, John rewrites it with a smaller group of people. 6 o'clock the show, 6:30 it's over. That's it.
That's an insane schedule to do that four or five days a week.
We work 5 days a week, we do 4 shows a week. But I was talking to someone this morning. Best way I can describe it is, it's incessant, the shows that we put together. So it's like working in a sausage factory, trying to churn out the highest quality sausages you can from some of the most disgusting ingredients imaginable. So that's...
And there's not very many female writers.
That's the other one. Yeah.
That's not true.
No, I know.
Yeah, we do have female writers, and which I think is slightly unusual for other late night shows. Yeah. And also, writing on the Daily Show, it's not just the writers that do it. It's also the people that source the clips. That is undeniably writing, because they're finding stuff and saying this will be funny next to this. And when I say funny, I mean incredibly depressing. So it's a very collaborative show. It's a lot of fun to work at, but it doesn't stop.
But I would imagine, you know, once you've worked on this show for a few years, as you have, I can't imagine if there's a writing job that would scare you after this.
Probably not. No, I mean it's a lot of fun, but it is exhausting.
Yeah.
We have this week off, hence coming down here. But otherwise, it does just go on and on. I just walked past the CNN truck earlier today, and I still feel like a naughty child. Walking past that, I'm kind of expecting someone to go, get away from that, you little ruffian.
Yeah, no, CNN's like, get off my lawn, Daily Show.
You think, well, I should feel like this compulsion to let down their tires or something. And I am an adult. I am genetically now an adult, and that should not even be a thought I have to refuse. Yeah, I just want to mess with that bus so bad. Why are they here?
I don't...
What are they doing? They seem so interested in doing anything other than being a news agency. Why are they here? I know there's an interactive element to it. I get that.
Yep.
But is that enough? Let me answer that. No, it's not.
But what else is going on right now that they could be covering?
I mean,
there's nothing.
That's their point.
I think of one thing.
It's just hipsters eating street sausage at 2 o'clock in the morning, and pretty much nothing else in the world.
Yeah, there's something so sad about seeing someone with a CNN badge and a flip cam pointing it.
That's
at someone
all of their reporters,
hot dog.
Isn't it? That's You're right. Like everyone, yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of it, though. They don't get to. They've all been told now they have to travel, kind of shooting themselves and doing their own sound journalism.
And their research is all off of Twitter. That's all, like I was watching CNN. It was just 5 minutes of reading tweets. I was like, this is fucking great.
Yeah.
I don't have to use my eyeballs. I could just use my ears and listen to this asshole and retweets for me. That's news.
Yep. Yep.
Is it the idea that so many people get their actual news from Daily
they
Show?
Don't.
I know,
they don't, Chris.
I know,
you know, they don't.
I know, but some people do. Some people do.
I don't think that's true. Because I think you'd have to be getting news from other sources to even understand what we were talking about. So I think that only occurs when it poses a question, do you watch The Daily Show or cable news? And if people go to us, and I'm not even sure they do, if they go to us over that is through a failing of the cable news rather than the success of what we do. We're a comedy show.
Yeah.
That we're pretty open about that. They are a news show and seem to be... There's some subterfuge as to whether that's actually the case or not. So, yeah, I really don't think young people, if I may cast you all with that, I don't think young people do get their news from The Daily Show. I think they come to us for comedy. And if you come to us for something other than comedy, you are going to be disappointed.
I tune into CNN for holograms.
Yep, that's right.
I flipped over to Headline News for the whole the Japan earthquake thing, and I was like, oh, Headline News would probably have, nope, Showbiz Tonight. But the Kardashians are really great.
Headline News doesn't...
It's hard to keep up
Headline
with
News doesn't really count, though. That's the kind of news you want if you're in an airport.
Right.
Nothing too
Ironically,
heavy.
I was.
Yeah, there you go. See, that's it.
Do you think you'd be able to, like, you know, at someday if you if you're not working at the Daily Show anymore, would you go to work for someone like CNN, or are you going to go?
No,
okay, no.
Because I'm not. Yeah, yeah. He's a comedian.
Will you end your comedy career to?
No, but I. But listen, it, like, if you know, if someone took over and they were like, we want to make the, you know, like, we want to do, be funny, and like, we want to present news in a funny way on a certain show. Like,
I would say you should go and do that on a comedy channel. And if you work for a news channel, stop trying to be funny, because you can't do it, and it's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, no, I would never, ever do that, because I'm not a qualified journalist. I do, as unlike what perhaps it seems, I do have great respect for good journalism, but so I can't do that. I have no journalistic skills or responsibility. That's what at times makes my job so easy. Because when you're interviewing people, they expect it to be within the rules of politeness that you get in journalism, and they are very quickly disappointed by those parameters.
I mean, at this point, people must know what they're getting into if you interview them.
I think they do, but I guess there's part of them that thinks, well, you know, it's going to be like a news interview. He's not going to tell me to go fuck myself. Not for one page of questions, I'm not, but then that is going to happen.
Do they not understand that you guys can edit the footage however you want?
It's amazing how, because people do believe what they say when you're interviewing these people. They, you know, we talk to them because they do hold these opinions. And so some of the crazier people, that often those that you think come out the worst from those field pieces, are often the ones that then call up the next day to say, can I have 30 copies of that on DVD for my family? And you think, you can. But I wouldn't in your position. But I think they're like watching it thinking, why are they laughing? I've made an entirely coherent point about the birthplace of Barack Hussein Obama.
Yeah. They don't understand. They don't see where the comedy is
coming from. I think they literally don't. I think they think, I got it, you know, I said what I thought. Why is that audience laughing at me?
Now, where do these people... How do you guys find these people? Do they write in and say I have a crazy thing, or is your team just scouring?
I want to look stupid. Yeah. Please put me on TV, Daily Show.
Dear Daily Show, I have a crazy thing.
Yeah. You always put any letters in green pen at the top of the pile.
The ones in crayon.
Yeah. No, we have researchers who like will find a story, and then they'll kind of go out and cast the people that you need for it. So then we go and talk to them. Yeah, every single one is different. That's kind of what makes it interesting. It all comes with different challenges.
How has working on The Daily Show changed your stand-up since you started?
It probably hasn't really, because I used the stand-up to kind of get away mentally from all of that. So I was doing stand-up that was slightly political before, and I guess it's still the same now. So there's not a lot of crossover writing-wise between writing for the show and writing stand-up.
I'm curious. England likes Kate Middleton, does not like Kate Middleton. Where are we on this?
We don't like her. We love her.
Oh.
We love that.
Is she another people's princess? I'm sorry. Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I thought enough time. It's too soon. You're right. I'm sorry. Jesus. So sorry.
No, do the accent again.
We're talking about...
Do the accent again.
We're talking about Sarah Ferguson, right? We're talking about Sarah Ferguson.
That's right, the real people.
Do the accent.
It's going to be very exciting, this wedding. Yes. We do hope, the British, that what's going to happen is that William and Kate are going to have the child that's going to get us our empire back one day.
Right.
Anything short of that, that child will have failed. But it will be great. You know, this wedding is going to be really... overblown mess. Something we cannot afford financially at the moment.
Yeah.
But we're going to spend that money anyway to see them parade down a road.
Yeah, that's insane. Or you just hear about like how many countries in the European Union are going bankrupt.
Yes.
And like, man, we're going to have 300 horses and gold carriages.
Yeah, we're going to have RuPaul's dream for one day. It's one day. It's going to be gold. It's going to be fabulous.
You should just have a bunch of people just dressed up in like bad clown makeup, just throwing cake at the commoners.
Yeah,
like, right,
because,
in their faces.
Because with the history of the royal family, that almost makes historic sense. But they would just throw stuff. You go, I guess maybe that, maybe it's tradition. We must keep this alive. Throw it again.
Do you feel like there will always be a British aristocracy, or at some point are they going to be like, okay, enough of this, come on?
Well, we still, you know, the Tower of London is still active, and I think that's the idea. The people like that that's still an option, that there are spikes on the top of that wall that we can use if we need to.
Okay.
But at the moment, they're just a nice kind of tourist thing. Now, what you often find with royal weddings is that when they interview people, when they go along the line of people standing there, almost half of them are American. It's just Americans going over there saying, you know, I love the pomp, I love the circumstance.
Yes, we don't have pomp and circumstance.
You don't have either of those things. No. And we have, you know, we have both of those in spades, but we just don't use them much. You know, we're like emotional volcanoes. So everything, we repress everything, and then it takes something like a royal event, wedding, or what you referred to, to get us, burst us out of our shell, and then you have this spectacular scene.
Yeah.
It's going to be ridiculous.
When is the wedding happening?
It is happening.
It's in April, right?
April 29th.
April 29th. Oh, counting down the days.
I can't believe it. Oh, fingers crossed.
What are you going to send them?
Oh, I don't know. Probably some kind of kitchen utensil. And an invoice for the tax I'm spending on that wedding.
You know, I would bet the Prince and Kate don't have a pizza pizzazz.
I bet they don't.
We can send
them. I bet they don't.
A hot diggity dogger. They could use that.
Right? A diggity dogger.
Toasts the buns too, Chris.
Oh my God.
Maybe I should send them one of those, something with an American twist, like one of those enormous muffin pans.
Yes.
You can make a giant muffin.
Yes. A giant opulent muffin.
A huge opulent
you
muffin.
You get that much more muffin top.
Yep.
You do.
A Trenta-sized Starbucks cup.
Right. Yeah. Or one of those, I think there's an Oreo pan where you can make one single Oreo.
What?
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Right? No, that sounds fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And you can fucking smother ice cream on the top of it.
Yes, you can. You're free
to
do that.
Cut it up like a cake?
Yep, you are free to do that. That is your right as an American.
That's fucking great.
Yeah. Jonah cannot wrap his mind around this.
It's pretty good.
Oreo, you caught me at Oreo. I love them.
Yeah, it's huge.
Is it weird to you that the royal family probably knows who you are?
No.
No?
I cannot believe that's true. I did get one of my proudest moments was before I left, I was working on this radio program, and I got, there was an official complaint about something I did from Buckingham Palace.
Ooh.
What you're not supposed to do, the Queen does a speech every Christmas. In the afternoon, she comes on TV and she talks to her subjects.
Sure.
Of which I am one.
And she, as we're familiar with from the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Right, yeah. There you go, yeah. I'm glad that's where you get your British history.
Yep, that's where we get our British news is from Doctor
Who.
There's
some weird looking people that can't climb stairs in Britain.
Yeah. Well, the Queen has to have that secret society, the secret agency, you know,
right.
the Torchwood project.
Yeah, so she speaks, and what you can't do is mess with that speech.
Okay.
The audio of it. Now, obviously, the problem is that's very tempting. And I gave in to that temptation, and I believe I set her speech to R. Kelly's I Believe I Can Fly. Now.
And she was not charmed by this. It's an inspirational song.
So they contacted, apparently, the palace contacted the radio station to say there is an official complaint. I said, can I please get that in writing? And I think they realised the complaint was not being received in the spirit in which it was issued. Because I wanted it so bad. Can you imagine that Buckingham Palace letterhead, a letter of complaint, how wonderful that would look?
Especially if they described what the infraction was.
Oh, that would be so good!
Yes.
So good. On the morning of April 22nd, you did place the...
I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky.
It's not okay.
Think about it every night and day.
Stop.
You spread my wings and fly away.
Reason, you're taking my
I believe I can fly.
I'm trying to talk to my
I
people.
Believe I can touch the sky.
We just put together our act for Edinburgh.
I think what we've just shown is that I did make her speech more interesting.
And if anybody will sue a podcast for copyright, it's R. Kelly. Yeah. After he pisses on somebody.
Little Richard style.
You're thinking of Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry style.
There you go.
I'm sure Little Richard peed on somebody. You can't deny that that's a good possibility. That Little Richard peed on
your logic
somebody.
Is
you
sound.
Just, you just got the title of your new 7-inch right there, my friend. Little Richard probably peed on someone. Yeah. Jonah Ray.
Hashtag fact.
Yeah.
Hashtag fact.
So you can't, can you really get in trouble with the royal family, or can they just kind of, is it just a slap on the wrist?
Well,
can they even do that?
Treason is still the only crime for which the death penalty is current. In
interesting.
So I don't think R. Kelly constitutes treason. but you can get in trouble if you mess with them.
Does not, in fact, believe she can fly.
That's right.
Chris, you're doing it again.
I'm sorry, I can't help it.
Yeah, but some reason, as the queen, it just didn't matter.
Yeah.
I didn't put my back up as much. She feels like, yes, you should have a voice like that, writing to people to tell you how you've let the queen down that year.
Don't they understand how British people work? Yeah. That everyone wants to get that letter.
That would be great, like a school report at the end of the year for every British
time
citizen.
Consuming.
That's right. These are the ways in which you have disappointed Her Majesty.
It's the new knighthood.
Yeah. The opposite of a knighthood. That'd be great if the Queen had a shit list instead. Announce it every year. The following subjects are on my shit list.
And instead of sir, they have to use the word cunt in front of your name.
Big swing, Chris. Big linguistic swing there. I admire that. You left that all on the field.
I did. I don't mind dropping the C-bomb. It just sounds so horrible with our American accents. That's the problem.
It sounds pretty bad with an English one as well. But it sounds more creepy than aggressive in an English accent.
Yeah, it does. It does.
I'm not going to embody that, Chris.
All right.
You'll have to do that.
Thought maybe I could. You could see my eyes. Like I got a little bit like we were on the end of a date, and I was hoping to get some tit or something. You're like, is he gonna say it?
Just a big tease.
Oh.
I'm taking that home for my boyfriend.
So, do you ever go back to England? You actually have not been back.
I've barely been back because I was applying for a green card for a while, and you can't leave the country.
Yeah. Did you get it? Did you get the green card?
I did get it.
Congratulations.
Thank you very
fantastic.
Much. Thank you.
Can I see? I can
show you what you can get if you marry Gerard Depardieu. Here,
oh, is he available?
Look, that's it.
My favorite thing is the giant magnetic strip on the back.
Oh, my God. That's weird.
Yeah. And it has... When I was in the airport the other day, at the top, those are all tiny images of each American president. So they look for Obama now to see if it's current.
Oh my God, that's crazy. That's what those little pictures are?
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's great. But yeah, I was very relieved to get it because living on a visa was absolutely awful. Because it's hard to explain to Americans, really, how difficult it is to get into your country and stay here.
Well, did you?
No, you just run in. You just run in.
You have an American Express card. You could have just gotten in with that, right?
I tried. Although I did, because it was really stressful living on a visa. And then I had to re-up it every year, and you'd have to leave. And you're pretty much just at the discretion of the individual person you talk to as to whether they will let you in or not.
Yeah.
And it was the last time I'd done it, they were only giving me 12-month visas towards the end, which was not a good sign. And I went up to the window at this in the American Embassy in London, and the woman looked at me and glared and said, give me one good reason I should let you back into my country to insult my president.
Oh.
And my stomach collapsed. And I thought, this is it. That's it. It's been fun, but I guess this is over now. And then she said, I'm just kidding. I love the show. Neither the time nor the place for that.
Hired.
I think she was expecting me just to kind of laugh, like, oh, thank you, but I was still devastated. That joke did not work, but then she just looked mortified because she could see how upset she made me. Go, no, it's funny. It's funny. It's funny how I nearly couldn't go and get my stuff. I can see why it's funny. I'll be able to laugh about this one day, but today is not that day, that's for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
That is genius.
Yeah, good for her, in a way.
And she's here tonight.
Yeah, it was a very stressful time.
So do you guys work, is it literally like 45 weeks a year? Do you only get a couple weeks off?
I don't know how many it is. We kind of have weeks off sporadically throughout the year. So this is one, and then I think we've got some time off in July.
Yeah.
2 weeks. and then maybe sometime later in the year.
Do you ever think beyond? Do you ever think beyond the show? Like, or do you want to do a sitcom? Do you want to do films? Do you want to do tour stand-up? What do you want to do?
I think I'm in an odd situation. I know lots of people have done The Daily Show and then gone on to do other stuff, whether it wanted to be a sitcom or a movie star. But I really love this show. Like, it was my favorite show before I came here. So I don't want to leave. So I won't leave until I'm fired, and I'm not even sure I'll leave then. If I was doing something else, I'd just be trying to get to work on The Daily Show. So I have no, it's nice to do other stuff for fun, but I have no desire to go and do anything else.
Do you guys, do you hang out with anyone from the show? I know Wyatt Cenec.
I know Wyatt very well.
Yeah, he's great.
He's great. Look, he got a single whistle there.
Wyatt got a single whistle.
And what I liked was it wasn't the kind of...
No, so it's impossible to determine the value of the intention of that whistle.
I love Wyatt. I love it. In fact, I had an anxiety dream that he was deciding to leave the show. It was a really specific dream. I can't believe I'm saying this out loud.
Please.
But it was like, it was like dreams you can do anything. Like, you could have an action movie. It was more like a Mike Lee film. hyper real. And he just said, yeah, I think I'm not going to work at the show anymore. I'm going to go and do something else. And I was devastated, and the scene played out.
And did you wake up crying?
And I woke up, thinking, oh, that's terrible, because I love him being on the show. I love having him around the office, and I'm awake, and he's not leaving.
Yay! And your fiancé's like, honey, why are you screaming Wyatt's name?
Yeah. You had another Wyatt dream, didn't you?
But this one was different. It was different.
No,
they're all different, aren't they? Did he leave again? This is bullshit. I'm going to be with Tyson.
And Wyatt, in fact, has done an hour special, which is coming up on Comedy Central, which I was at the taping of, and it's fantastic.
He's so fucking funny.
So I think that's going to be on in May, and that's worth looking out for.
I'm so glad. And Wyatt's one of those guys who, he was around the UCB New York, he came around to UCB LA. He was always one of the guys that you would want to watch when he would perform. Yeah. And he kind of got to a point... where, things weren't going as hot. He was kind of like money was a little tight, and then this is his last Hail Mary pass, and he fucking gets on The Daily Show.
It was amazing. He had his car repoed the week before he got hired on our show. That's true. Yeah,
and so it was his life changed within a week.
Yeah,
when he got on the Daily Show.
It's been great.
Are you going to do another special since you've been doing the John Oliver shows?
I think so. I know that I owe them a special.
Yeah. You owe us a special, you know.
I do want to do a special, but I think I'd like to do something that's slightly different than just a normal hour stand-up, because I really like doing this series of having with other people there. It's more fun doing it with other people.
Yeah.
So I like doing stand-up that way, but I'll do a special of some kind. I just don't know what it is yet.
Do you get to travel a lot around the country? Do they send you a lot?
Yeah, to interview people, to meet the America's greatest whack jobs for The Daily Show. I definitely do that. And I do stand up as much as I can. Yeah, I travel around. I was here. I was in the Paramount Theatre in Austin.
Excellent.
Yeah. Woo, the Paramount. and I've just been in Dallas and Houston on the way here just to do a couple of gigs.
Houston is an interesting town.
Is it?
There are no...
How, Chris?
Define interesting.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, how?
Houston has no zoning laws. And so, all right. So you'll see like a huge, super futury looking office building right next to like a dumpy strip club. Like, there's no zoning laws in Houston.
True. Yeah, it is. It is architecturally eccentric. I was in Dallas. I walked into by chance. Have you been to the Book Depository?
No.
I was just walking along, just thinking I'll just walk around Dallas, and then realizing Dallas did not hold much for me. And then I walked it. I suddenly thought, I wonder where that was, and checked on my phone, and it was a few blocks away. And they put two crosses in the road, in the middle of the road, where the two bullets hit. And it means, and there's still an active road. So all you see is people running into the road in between traffic, striking a pose, any of which would be inappropriate.
Pretend like you're shooting me. Pretend like you're shooting me.
I'm going to go back and to the left. You get the shot.
I'll be on the knoll.
Just to be safe. Cover the knoll. Just to be safe. We're not going to know yet. Yeah. So when we find out.
Take two pictures from there and one from over there.
Someone be the cigarette smoking man in the sewer.
But we're going to lose the picture from over there on the knoll.
But there was a father there who had a cuddly toy. Like, businessmen sometimes carry their children's toys.
Yep.
Yeah, in cell phone commercials. Yeah.
Oh, does that not happen?
I don't think so.
Oh, I thought
I've never seen it. Is that real? Is that a thing?
Do they do that?
Has anyone ever... Has that,
are there any businessmen here?
Yes.
All right.
No, I didn't think so.
I am a businessman.
So like, show to famous places where it's been. But again, that was a little weird.
Yeah.
Take a photo of that. Unless you're taking photos of all world assassination sites to kind of depress your daughter. Say, look, we're in New Delhi. Here's where Gandhi was hit.
Then we're going to hit the Sadat camp. You know, we're just going to cover them all.
Very weird. It was really fascinating.
We got Reagan even though he didn't fucking die. Well, whatever.
Here's your elephant at Ford's Theater.
It was an interesting thing to visit because it was much closer than I thought it would be.
Can I pitch you a show? Your travel show? Mm-hmm. John Oliver's Assassin Nation.
Oh.
All right.
Oh, shit.
We send you around to all the famous assassination spots.
Well, that's got to appeal to the sponsors. A British person taking us through America's greatest assassinations. That's right, Middle America. It's coming. Let's not.
We'll soften the blow. We'll put you in the Dakota in New York. We'll just have you where John Lennon was killed.
Then we'll move into presidents.
John Oliver's assassination. You'll never see it coming.
We have a show for you.
It's hard to resist a tag as good as that.
You know, the concept is a little dodgy, but you got a good tag. A good tag's a good tag.
A good tag is all you need.
Yeah. You don't even need to make the show. So you're going back to New York after you're doing shows tonight. Who's on your shows tonight?
Pete Holmes.
Yeah.
Al Madrigal.
Excellent.
Kumail Nanjiani.
Wonderful.
Great. I was wondering if you were going to leave a gap at some point there.
No.
Kumail Nanjiani and hold on, who did I say? Pete Holmes, Brendan Walsh,
Jeff Dunham.
Jeff Dunham is there.
Right. Doesn't belong in that group at all.
Ron White is going to be performing. Larry the Cable Guy will be with
wonderful.
Us. Yes, that's right. Who else? I can't remember. Some fantastic people.
Now you're involved in the selection of the comics for your show. Am I not mistaken?
Yeah. Well, I kind of the ones is obviously some people that know there are comedians that people know like Maria and so on, but some are newer comics that I'd seen just doing gigs.
Yeah.
And so we try to get as many on of them as we can. There's a guy, Mike Lawrence, very new, excellent, did a really great set. So that's the first time he's been on TV.
That's cool. Because what is really amazing is it's not just to get a stand-up show on the air, but to do a season two is an incredible feat.
Thank you.
It really is. Like most stand-up shows, you know, like that's why they don't program them anymore. Like in the 80s, was there a stand-up comedy boom in England in the 80s like
no,
it was here?
No, but we're getting it now.
Oh, now you're getting it.
Yeah, and it is weird watching it because there are stand-ups playing arenas. Like a friend of mine who was just doing normal gigs before I left. Last time I spoke to him, he was doing a 20,000-seater arena.
Like the O2 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not good for stand-up. No stand-up gig benefits from seeing someone that small.
No.
That's not good.
Yeah.
So we are about to go through the 1980s in England, in stand-up and economically.
now's a good time.
But yeah, I love stand-up. You know, so it's... I think it kind of helps if you make a show like that with real love because it's easy not to really give a shit about stand-up.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy not to give a shit about it.
Well, there were tons. I mean, like, you know, like kind of during the end of the stand-up boom in the early 90s, I had a bunch of friends who did this thing called Buster Poindexter's Happy Hour on VH1. And they had Buster Poindexter, and he was just, the set was that he was in a lounge and he just had these people come in and do comedy. And that was the show where they accidentally introduced Dana Gould as Carlos Mencia.
Oh.
I was at the taping, and they're like, ladies and gentlemen, Carlos Mencia. And Dana Gould walks out, and Dana Gould just instantly goes, isn't it crazy to be Latino? They were like, cut.
Oh, no. Cut is the opposite of what they should have shouted.
They didn't miss a fucking... He didn't miss a fucking beat with it. It was a gorgeous moment.
I have one question there.
Yes.
Who is Buster Poindexter?
Buster Poindexter is a guy named David Johansen, New York Dolls, and then and then in the 80s, he did this character called Buster Poindexter. He was this, like...
He was in Scrooged.
Yep. Ghost of Christmas Past. Yeah. Or the Ghost of Christmas Past, as Dickens would have written him. the cab driver. But he was kind of a popular... Sort of like popular in the way that Dr. Joyce Brothers was popular. You know what I mean? He did that
in
song.
In the way that Max Headroom started doing Coke commercials.
That's everyone's hot, hot, hot. That one song.
Everyone's hot, hot, hot.
Yeah.
Are you feeling it? Hot, hot, hot. Hey, man,
hot, hot, hot.
You mean a feeling? Hot, hot, hot.
That's Buster Poindexter. Hot, hot, hot. Yep. Yep.
Hey, oh, I know that.
Now everybody get up. And...
Of course Esther's Follies has this queued up.
Of course it does. Why would they not?
That's what the building...
There's just a button that says hot, hot, hot. They don't even have to look into a computer. They just up, hot, hot, hot.
Two buttons. One says lights, one says hot, hot, hot.
That's it. You got yourself Esther's Follies.
And that is what it's like to have a radio show.
Well done.
Fart drop.
Wow.
Fart drop. Yeah. You know, I'd love to, if it's okay with you, I'd love to take some questions from the audience. Do you mind answering a couple of questions from people?
It depends on the question, but sure.
All right, well, you can pick and choose. You don't have to answer if you don't want to.
I'm kidding.
Let's go with this gentleman right here, because he's up front and spunky. What's your name?
I'm Shane.
Shane, what is your question?
When you travel all over the United States, was there one time when you were really scared to interview someone? If so, when, where, and why did it scare you?
I got this, John.
Thank you.
You need to be more specific.
Oh, it's for John Oliver. The celebrity? Okay. No, go for it.
You just stretched that term to breaking point, but... there were two times. I was at a Sarah Palin rally in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And they had signs, the police were saying on the way in, no signs, no guns in there. So leave your signs, leave your guns. And we were interviewing people outside the perimeter of that. And I do remember thinking this could be the last thing I do. And then the other time was I had to interview we sometimes interview ambassadors. I interviewed the Israeli ambassadors to the UN, and it was very dramatic to even get in there. We were having to, they had Mossad searching our cameras, breaking them down, rebuilding them, and sat there. And I knew that my first question for him was, as a British person, obviously, I'm an anti-Semite. Please convince me that you're not running the world. So I see this on my leg, and I see Mossad with machine guns over his shoulder, and similarly think, okay, well, if I had to go, this would be an interesting way to do that. And actually, it's very sweet. He was a really nice guy. And when the woman who'd set up the interview, when I asked that question, she was in my eye line. And all I saw was her hand go up to her face.
How did he answer it?
He laughed, and he was incredibly nice and gracious and depressingly used to anti-Semitic comments, I think. Albeit, I think it was quite nice to have an anti-Semitic comment that someone didn't mean.
Well, and also, like, again, people know, they should have an understanding.
He knew full well, and he was really happy with it at the end. But yeah, those were the two moments that stick out.
All right, what is your name, sir?
John, as well. I went to high school with Wyatt Cenac, and I just, if you would like see yearbook photos, I could bring those to you.
Oh, yeah, now? Well, then go away.
Where was that?
Did you have a question?
Where was the high school?
That was my question. Oh, Jesuit in Dallas?
Yeah.
I went to Jesuit school? I went to Jesuit school. Did you guys have Jug? No. Jug was detention in Jesuit school. It meant justice under God.
Oh, boy.
So if you got Jug, like, shit was about to get real.
Did it work?
Do you need a lens that size for how close I am? Do you want to have a ginormous face with a puzzled pink finger point?
I can't wait to see MSNBC's late night schedule Jug Raw now.
I want to start a new meme. Puzzled Chris Hardwick. I'm just pointing at the meme. What is your name, sir?
Mike,
what's your question?
Well, you're going to have a bigger role.
You can put your hand down. You don't have to keep your hand up.
Oh, I see Mike still has a question.
Will you get a bigger role on Community on the next couple episodes in season 3?
What was the question?
Will you get a recurring role on Community? Will you get a bigger role in the next season?
No. Wow, what an emotional roller coaster I took you on there. I've shot another couple of episodes before the end of the season, so there are a couple more coming up, but I can't do any more than I do right now because I don't want to leave The Daily Show. So they're incredibly, incredibly generous about working around my schedule, so when I have a week off, I can go and do a couple of episodes for them, which is exactly as much fun as you imagine it would be.
And I'm so glad, you know, because when I saw the Community pilot, people I talked to afterwards, after they saw the first episode,
I was like, oh my God, John Oliver's in it. And there was always a little bit of like, yeah, but he's only in the pilot.
Yeah.
You know, like they wanted you to come back.
Oh, let's hope so. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to do. And I do like the show. I didn't really have any interest of being in a sitcom, but I liked that particular one a lot.
It's nice.
They try
it's,
hard.
And it's not sitcom-y. Like, it's not a sitcom-y format.
No,
so.
It's amazing what they can get away with.
All right, here's a gentleman right here in the middle. What is your name, sir?
Hold me, Papa Bear.
This is a bear cub situation if I've ever seen one. And judging by the boner in my leg, that is not a joke. All right, what is your name, sir?
Jim.
Jim, and what is your question?
Does it happen very often, or has it ever happened that you lost it while asking a question and trying to keep it together?
Lost it how?
Like you just
like broke?
Keep it together, you couldn't help but laughing while asking a question?
Not really, because the atmosphere in the room during those interviews is not really very funny. So I generally don't giggle so much as already wince, thinking, oh, do I have to say this thing I thought of? That's the problem when you're writing ideas for these field pieces. It's sometimes so stupid where you think, oh, it'd be really funny if the correspondent said this to this person. You think, well, I'd then have to go and fucking do that. So why don't I shut my fucking mouth? It'd be funny if it was just a pleasant conversation. It'd be really funny, wouldn't it? Nice. It'd be nice. It'd be a nice conversation to have.
Do you feel a constant pressure, like when you... Now I'm just walking around like Phil Donahue. John, let me ask you, John.
Do you feel a constant pressure? That's how you would ask.
That's how he would ask it. Like he's shooting bullets with his words. Do you feel a constant pressure, like, you know, because there is a lot of shock value that is utilized in the show, right? Do you ever feel pressure like that you have to keep topping previous interviews, or do you not think about it in
not
those
really,
terms?
It's kind of a case-by-case basis. They're all so different. What you're trying to get from people and how you're going to do it is so different. You kind of make it different so that it stays interesting. That no, not really. Not really. And also, kind of, because we churn out so much, I tend to forget the pieces off pretty soon after we've done them because you're already worried about how you're going to emotionally get through the next one. It's not a lot of fun. You do have to kind of turn off. It is a lot of fun after the fact. In the room, you do have to kind of flick off your compassion switch and hope that it switches back.
Are you ever in a situation where you're at home and you've gotten home from work and you see some insane thing happen on the news and then you just instantly feel like, oh, fuck, I'm going to have to cover that.
Yep. So then you want to maneuver as fast as possible to say, hey, Wyatt, you're not doing anything next week, are you? It'd be so funny if Wyatt was there.
What is your name, sir?
Orion.
And what? Oh, Orion. I like it. Thanks for being here. All right. What is your question?
Well, kind of a follow-up to that one. You go to, like, C-SPAN, or on The Daily Show, you see all these people... the politicians, and they say the most ridiculous things. Do you have people on The Daily Show that just follow C-SPAN and follow Fox News every single hour of the day trying to follow?
Yeah, and imagine what their eyes look like. Yeah, we do. We have a whole department who sit just with stacked TiVos and record everything and go through it, and it is looking into the heart of darkness every day for
them. They probably all look like they've just received the Dementor's kiss.
Is that, or it's like Rutger Hauer at the end of Blade Runner? I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
Attack ships on fire off the shores of Orion.
Yeah.
Orion, bringing it back with a kind of nerdy reference. Your name is Elizabeth. I'm singing you a song. Rubbing your shoulders. Let me see your thong. All right. Thank you. Come on.
Invasive.
Yeah, really. And I'm touching you. What is your question?
I'm wondering about any interviews that have really gone poorly where the people have reacted violently or angrily to what you've been asking.
I've never been hit yet. So I'm sure...
Keyword, yet.
Yeah. So it's never got that far, but the Swiss ambassador... was the opposite of pleased.
Well, he has so many things at his disposal.
Yeah.
A knife, a magnifying glass.
I got it. Yeah, that was good.
Not yet. I haven't been hit yet, thank you.
All right, what is your name, madam?
Rachel.
Hey, Rachel. What was your question?
Can I actually ask you a question?
Ooh.
The answer is we'll be done in 15 minutes. Yes.
Mary Shag Cliff, David Tennant, Craig Ferguson, or John Oliver?
Oh.
What, as a doctor? Or you mean no. You mean like who?
It's
who?
F. Mary Kill.
Oh, fuck Mary Kill.
Yeah. We can say that.
Think about this. Don't jump to any quick conclusion here.
Who was it? It was Tennant and John. Who's the other one? And Ferguson. All right.
I'm gonna die.
Shit.
I mean, you do know two of them personally. I don't know if that might play into your murder kill situation.
Well, it's all obvious to us who he's gonna fuck. It's gonna be David Tennant.
Gotta fuck David Tennant. Yeah.
And you're gonna be like, I'm the best companion, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you're gonna say the whole
I'm
time.
Gonna fuck David Tennant right in his Scottish mouth. Yeah.
And then you're gonna say, you looked into the vortex.
Yeah.
Looking at the heart of your TARDIS, yeah.
Damn it. Okay, I would marry John Oliver.
Aww.
Yeah.
Wait, is that just because he's here?
Yes.
No, because he's, you know, like he just feels like he's a good type to marry.
Unmarriable.
Yeah.
Unmarriable.
What I'm saying is, will you be my wife?
Yeah.
You guys!
Ferguson would fuck you over, and he'd run around you right to kill him. I will be by your side for the rest of your life.
I feel like, boy, you know, if I killed Ferguson, it wouldn't be because I want him dead. It's just because...
You want the 12:30 slot on CBS?
That's how you get it. That's how you get it. That is how you really get the role. Like, that's how I would get that job.
It's a news contract. If Letterman goes, you know,
yeah,
unexpectedly, Ferguson gets it.
Ferguson gets it. So then I wouldn't have to kill him in that place.
All right.
And when you get it, I'll be so proud of my husband.
But he won't be there. He's going to be too busy fucking David Tennant, right?
Yeah.
You were not there for the high five, my friend. This is the universal sign for high five. Well, welcome to our country. What is your name, ma'am? Taylor, how are you? I'm just going to use you as a leaning beam. I hope you don't mind.
John, has there ever been a joke that you would not say to anybody?
Oh, I really wish there was. Because that would make me so much of a better person. Well, there is, because you always want to make sure you make those kind of decisions in the edit. Like whether you want to have done something or not. But you need to have done it to be able to make that decision. So, no. I'm sorry.
I think we have time for a couple more questions. What is your name, sir?
Hi.
That would be so awesome if your name was Trip. Oh, my God. We would have such a laugh.
Hi, I'm Eric. I'm a fan of the Bugle. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the Bugle.
Thank you. I do a podcast called The Bugle with my friend Andy Zaltzman.
I was really hoping it was going to be like the instrument, the bugle.
Yeah.
It's a passion of mine, and it's the only thing I will leave The Daily Show for, and that is a solo stadium bugle tour. Why stadium? Because you need a big stage and a big arena to appreciate the sound.
How do you change the sound?
Excellent question. It's all to do with lip pressure. And the sonorous qualities of the bugle you won't find in a trumpet or cornet, or indeed French horn.
This is so interesting.
Did this answer your question, sir? Tell us about your podcast a little bit.
I do, but my friend Andy Zaltzman, who I worked with for years, we
get ready for the Nerdist bump. Go.
Yeah. We do every Friday a podcast called The Bugle. It's an audio newspaper for a visual world. That's
good tagline.
Yeah.
All right, what is your name? Oh, I just kicked over a thing. Was that a beverage? Oh, good. Hey, thanks for being drunk. All right. I fucking finished that shit. I wouldn't leave a fucking... What is your name, sir?
I'm Mike. And I was wondering, if you could have any superpower, what would it be, aside from maybe lessening the British accent?
Is that a superpower? Really?
I didn't get that.
I'm not sure I understood that, but I feel like we're all in sixth grade smoking pot for the first time. If you could have any superpower.
If you could have any superpower, and one of it was so that your accent was not nearly as thick as it is.
Oh my God, that's so fucking racist.
Yeah,
if
is
you
that
were.
What he said?
Yes.
If you were, as far as I could hear, that's what he said.
Texas, thank you.
If you were any phase of a star, would you be a red dwarf?
I would be a green giant, Chris.
A jolly green. What is your Aubrey? See, this was so great about having badges everywhere. Aubrey Hooser.
Kind of amazing, isn't it?
It really is.
Can I ask everybody a question?
All right.
I feel really bad about your taco experience,
but
I appreciate your mustache observances of Austin.
Yes.
Have you guys been to El Cholito for your free mustache rides?
No.
What is a mustache ride?
They have a giant mustache that you can ride. And a taco at the same time.
Wait a second.
I am so glad El Cholito Corporation has inserted a...
That is only one thing I love.
A bowl.
I am there. And I will take you for your mustache.
Isn't it usually the taco that's getting the mustache right?
I'm not even sure we can follow that with anything. I mean, that was gorgeous happening right there. All right, we have a couple more minutes. One more question, you, sir.
What made all of you want to start being a comic?
Sadness. Horrible, horrible sadness.
It is all the sadness in the universe condensed into singularity until it just sucks the joy of all the people around you like
my
a big black
sense
hole.
My sense of humor was developed as a coping mechanism for my weight.
Good answer.
Thank you.
Good answer. Well, I'm guessing you didn't want the answers that you're getting. You realize now that maybe that question, the generic sound, it was fine. You ever actually want to tap underneath the insecurity of comedians, you're going to get something a little different. I wanted to be an athlete when I was growing up, and that was obviously quickly became clear that was not going to be an option for Skinny John.
Yeah, well, you guys have Quidditch. I mean, you could be a keeper.
I could have done that. That's true.
I like that the Harry Potter reference elicits shrieks. Yeah.
So did you start doing comedy like from a teenager, or was it something when you got
I always loved comedy, but I did want to be a professional football player. Yeah. That is what I badly wanted and what my dad wanted.
A striker?
I actually left midfield.
Oh,
but
all right.
Yeah, I saw myself as a
less
creator.
Glory up there, yeah.
That's right, but you know, I guess I modeled myself as like an Andre Iniesta, who's a fantastic Spanish. But ooh, good. It's I was not people. Expecting that wow. to land.
And how did you start doing comedy in London? Was it like you go to open mics or how did it
yeah,
work there?
There's a lot of stand up clubs in London, and by clubs I mean back rooms of pubs.
Yeah.
But there's 80 in London alone. So yeah, I started doing stand up there and writing as well. But
you can make money doing stand up in pubs,
that
right?
That is the key difference.
Yeah.
Is that you can make a living doing stand up in England, which is much more difficult, much more difficult. Here in America. So stand-up in England can be its own reward. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do TV. You don't have to decide to make your stand-up act something that you can sell in another form. It can be its own thing, which is why it's particularly inventive, or can be particularly inventive. It's also total shit. Like most stand-up, it can be great and completely unwatchable.
Yeah.
But it's why people like Simon Munnery, who I referred to earlier, incredibly imaginative. I don't know if he can make a kind of career that he's made in England here. Because just economically, it's much more difficult. Further to travel, paid less. It's a very difficult situation here for emerging.
That's why all the Americans, if you took anything from earlier, let's flock to England to take over the comedy boom. Maybe they haven't pointed out how crazy flying is yet over there.
It's Chris.
It'll be brand
it
new.
Sure is, Chris. Come and get hot, honey.
Come for the wedding, stay for the stand-up.
Well, I know you have two shows to do tonight, but John Oliver, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you.
Here and being on the Nerds Podcast. Thank you so much to Esther Spallies, Charlie Sotelo, South by Southwest, Sean O'Keefe, Jonah Ray, Matt Myra, I'm Chris Hardwick. Good night, Austin. Thank you so
Enjoy
much for being
your
here. Enjoy your burrito, everybody. Good night.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Gen Z high school girls have gone through a lot. So what could and did send a shockwave through a group of 50 of them competing in one of the nation's biggest scholarship competitions? I'm your host, Shimo Liai, and I'm going to take you behind the scenes of the Distinguished Young Women Competition. I was Nevada's competitor 20 years ago, but this time, a Supreme Court decision catapults all 50 girls into the center of a nationwide debate about their rights. These girls, who have spent months fighting to make it to nationals, are faced with a tough decision. Do they speak up for their political beliefs, or do they stay focused on winning the money?
I think it's going to get ugly.
Follow the competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of the competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.